I'll start by reading chapter 31 this morning. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. What, my son, and what the son of my womb, and what the son of my vows? Give not your strength unto women, nor your ways unto that which destroy kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it's not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. Give strong drink to him that is ready to perish, and wine to those that be of heavy hearts. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. Open your mouth for the dumb in the case of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She's like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands she plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle goes not out by night. She lays her hands to the spindle and her hands hold the distaff. She stretched out her hand to the poor, yea, she reaches forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen and sells it and delivers girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in a time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and her tongue is the law of kindness. She looks well in her ways of her household, and eats not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you excel them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now we'll go back and talk about this. As I've taught all the way through the book of Proverbs, this book is not a book of poetry, as the church realm teaches. This is a book of wisdom. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon, all are books of wisdom. Okay? And you could say this about the Bible. The whole Bible is a book of wisdom, if you interpret it correctly. This is a roadmap for your life, starting from chapter 1, verse 1 through. And I can't go back and teach that today. I've got to just stay where I'm at, but I can give you a little recourse there. But this is a roadmap on how to live your life. And when we go back to this first verse here and start to break it down, it said the words of King Lemuel. Well, most people think that's some king named Lemuel, but really it's Solomon. It was a pet name that his mother gave him. So we're just talking about who? Solomon, the same one who wrote the whole book, okay? The whole book of Proverbs. It says the prophecy, or literally the oracle is what it should say, that his mother taught him. And what is an oracle? No, it's words. So really he could just say this is a discourse or an utterance or a speech or just words that my mother taught me. That's what he's really saying. He's saying this is what my mother taught me. And the next verse goes on and says, what my son, what the son of my womb, and what the son of my vows. Literally, I think the word why fits it better, okay? The word why, because Solomon done some foolish things. Would you agree?
Yeah, we all do.
And in the book of Ecclesiastes, he said he did everything. He tried the wine, the women, the song. He did everything it was and found out it was all what?
Vanity.
It's all vanity. And the word vanity literally means temporary and worthless, okay? Temporary and worthless, huh?
Unsatisfactory.
It's just not what it should be. So she's kind of asking him, like, why are you doing these things? Why would you do these things? Why would you do all these things, my son? And then she says, not to give your strength. And that word strength really doesn't mean like your strength of your arms or your muscles. It's talking about your resources and your wealth. And from experience, we know that when we start to roam around and run the world, what happens to our resources and our wealth? They fly away, don't they? We find some woman get up close to us out in one of them bars, next thing you know, you ain't got nothing but an empty pocket. It happens. But that's what she's talking about. He had to go out and find his way. He did a lot of things. But she gave him wisdom not to do it. But does that mean he's going to listen to her?
No.
He had to find out on his own. You can tell somebody something, but you don't have the revelation of something until you experience it yourself. Like Lois was talking about earlier. I can say, don't touch this thing right here. It's red hot. And if it's red hot and I touch it and it burns me, now I have an experience to go along with the words someone told me. Correct? It's not about just what I said, but if I touch it and get burned, I have learned that thing I shouldn't touch.
Now you know.
That's the difference between the law and grace and mercy. The law says don't do it. If you do it, we'll just kill you or ostracize you. Grace and mercy says you shouldn't do it, but if you do, I'm still going to love you, but you're going to have an experience you won't like. You're going to get burned. See? And you've got to reap what you sow in that experience. That's okay. You'll get through it. But don't give your strength to women, your wealth and resources, nor your course of life to that which destroys kings. There's a certain course of life that we know can be productive to us in the natural and the spiritual, and there is a course of life that would lead to destruction. Is that correct? And she says, you know, don't give that course of your course of life, and that's the spiritual way, don't give that to the way of destruction. Because even if we're called to be a king and we live that course, what happens to us? We saw King Saul, the first king. What happened to him when he lived that life?
Slain.
He got slain, didn't he? It'll take us one way or another. Doesn't mean you're going to hell. Forget that. That's not even in the picture. That's not what we're talking about. Lest they drink and forget, or it says, lest they drink and forget, or literally ignores what the word should be, ignore the law. They didn't forget, did they? It just doesn't matter anymore. And pervert the judgment of not any, but all that are in depression or in poverty. See, the people that have the hardest time in the court system is poor people. Would you agree to that? If you got money, you can walk around about anything out there, can't you? But if you don't have any money, just like I was sharing with Don this morning about the two cops that got caught speeding in Columbus, one run 147, one clocked at 149. If you or I had got caught doing that, we would still be in jail right now. These guys didn't even leave their job, and one of them was even on disability from workers' comp. You know, they don't lose their job. They smack them on the wrist and put them on a desk job so they don't have to do any work for 30 days and still pay them and then put them back to work out on the road again. They give them a vacation.
Amen.
Yeah, see, because of position and authority and money, they get around the law. But that's the way it's always going to be. It's never going to change in our lifetimes, I promise you that. We have to learn to live with it. And if you keep your nose clean, it won't bother you, will it?
Just don't focus on anger.
Don't worry what they're doing, just worry about yourself. Let's say keep yourself straight and you'll be fine. Okay. Verse 6, give strong drink to him that is ready to perish, and wine to those that be of a heavy heart. Now, that's not literally what it says. The word heavy should be bitter, and the word heart should be mind. That means someone has a bitter attitude because of things that's happened. Does anybody know anybody like that? They're always bitter because somebody did something to them. Rather than dealing with it and going on, they sit and stay bitter about it. Unforgiveness and bitterness is like a cancer that will eat you alive. You have to go on with it. You know, just let it go. The person that did it will have to reap what they did. Okay? Verse 7 says, let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. Verse 8, go open your mouth for the dumb. I hate that word because it's not dumb. It's speechless. Open your mouth for the ones who can't speak for themselves. Okay? Open for your mouth for the speechless in the judgment, not cause, but in the judgment of all. Now, the next few words, such as are, those three words are not in the writing. Those are added. So it should say, open your mouth for the speechless in the judgment of all, not appointed, but, appointed, yeah. Say it again. Open your mouth for the speechless in the judgment of all survivors, appointed to survive. I'll get it right in a minute. Keep my mind on it. All that are appointed to survive. He said, speak to the ones that are appointed to survive and plead for all of them. Now, how many are appointed to survive?
All.
All's going to make it. Everybody's going to make it. Just got some other things we have to experience. Verse 9 says, open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead for the poor and the needy. Didn't Jesus say the healthy have no need of a physician? The ones that's not healthy, and he's talking about here. And we're not talking about crazy people. We're talking about people that had not have the mind they should have directed the way it should be. Okay? Now you notice right there in verse 10, there's a context change, isn't there? And technically, this is a whole new story now. Now we're going to talk about this virtuous woman. Who can find a virtuous woman? Literally, it should be wife. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her price, or her value, what should say, is far above, not rubies, but jewels. Far above all the precious jewels. The heart or the mind of her husband does safely trust in her, or the word safely isn't there either. It should say her husband does trust in her, so he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil or bad all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax or linen and works willingly with her hands. And her works are represented by what? Hands. Hands in the scriptures represent her works. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night. She gives meat, but should say food, to her household or her family, and a portion to her maidens. Now you'll notice I've been saying the word she and her quite a bit. Notice that? It's 52 times in this chapter. How many weeks in a year? She's covered every week of the year. It's all the time. Verse 16 says, she considers a field and buys it. I wonder what field are we talking about? You think it's a piece of dirt out there somewhere? The field represents the mind. And that's what we're talking about. If you go in the New Testament, they talk about the field. The wise man bought a field because there was a pearl of great price in it. Wonder what that might be. Same story. She buys it, and with the fruit of her hands, or the labor of her hands, she plants a vineyard. And that's Christ being planted in us. That's God being planted in us. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise or her profit is good. Her candle or her lamp goes not out by night. That means she's not walking in ignorance. Nighttime, darkness represents ignorance. So she's never walking back into ignorance, is she? She lays her hands to the spindle and her hands hold to the staff. That means she's working all the time, always doing what she has to do, always. She gets the job done, no matter what. No excuses, how about that?
She's focused.
Focused, no excuses. She stretches out her hand to the poor. And again, this word poor means the ones that are depressed in the mind or in circumstances. She helps people that need help. She reaches forth her hands to the needy, and that's the destitute. She's helping everybody that she can. But you know this needy and destitute, what it's ultimately speaking of? Us. When my woman reaches out to me, my spiritual inside, when it reaches out to me, I'm the one that's needy and destitute. Do you see that? See, I'm the one ultimately needs help. Each one of us individually, we need help. That's why we have a Savior. That's why there was a crucifixion and a resurrection, because we needed help. And if we can't see ourselves as needing help, who's going to help us? So he said he didn't come for the well. He came for what? The sick, the crippled, the lame. See, that's who he came for.
Lame of mind, crippled of mind.
That's right. It's all up here. It's all in the mind. She is not afraid of the snow. What does snow represent?
Death.
Wintertime or death. In wintertime, everything dies, recedes back into the earth. She's not afraid of the snow or the wintertime or death for the household.
Life's ways.
Yep. Because all her household are clothed with scarlet. Scarlet represents what?
Blood of Christ.
The blood of Christ. So she says her whole household's covered with the blood. Now, we have these prejudices in our minds that's been built up, and the whole world has prejudices. But you know, we all came from two people, Adam and Eve. Right?
Did we?
Sure we did.
One
that was split. One that was split, which was made two. So we all came from that. So if we all came from the same source, what are we?
Related.
We're all family. We're all related. So when she said she's not afraid for her family, guess what? Because they're scarred with clothed with scarlet, what's she talking about? She's talking about all humanity. We're all from the same family, the human race, right? So she's not concerned with it. So the soul is not concerned with it because they're all covered.
She knows who's in control.
She knows who's in control, exactly right. So she's got everything covered and she knows it. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. She should just say she makes herself coverings. The word tapestry isn't even there. Her clothing is silk, or literally white linen and purple. White and linen are synonymous. Linen is white, and the word there can be used white or linen from that word where it says silk. But white and purple both speak of two things, righteousness and what?
Royalty
for purple. So she knows that we're all from the same family. What is our family name? God. Are we not God's children? Psalm 82:6 says, we are all, A-L-L, children of the Most High God. Same thing in John 10:34.
Yeah.
See? So we are all children of the Most High God. So we're all from that same family. And she knows we're all covered with the righteousness and the royalty of God, whether we believe it or not. That's why the book says, even if you deny him, he cannot deny himself because he's in you. Beautiful picture to me. A lot better than that one the church preaches about burning you in hell. That don't look good to me. It's not true anyway. Okay, verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits with the elders of the land. Who's the husband that they're talking about?
Christ.
Absolutely, it's the Christ. The Christ within you. She makes fine linen, and it literally says fine linen wraps, and sells them, and delivers girdles or supplies belts to the merchants. She makes merchandise. She's always producing what needs to be produced to get by. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall not rejoice, but laugh in pleasure. She shall laugh in pleasure in the days to come. Because she's covered and she knows that she's doing what she's supposed to be doing. She's not worrying about somebody, what should I do? See, she's listening to the inner self, to the Christ. Not going with the flow of humanity, right. She's doing what's within her. And that's what we all should be doing, listening to the Christ within us. It says, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. Doesn't say she's got a right to be mean, does it? She's probably been mistreated, I guarantee you, but she's still doing the right thing. She looks well to the ways of her household and eats not the bread of idleness, and literally the word should be laziness. She doesn't. She's not lazy. Her children, literally her sons, is what the word is. It's the word Hebrew word bane, B-A-N-E, okay? Or B-E-N, it should say. Pronounced B-A-N-E, but spelled B-E-N. Okay. But her sons rise up and call her blessed. Her husband, and who is her husband?
Christ.
Christ, okay. Also, praise, he also... pray, and her husband should say just, and her husband praises her. So, who is that? The Christ is praising his woman, his wife, his bride. Many daughters have done virtuously, but you excel them all. And I'll read that out of the Living Bible. Just give me a second here. Okay. The Living Bible says, there are many fine women in the world, but you are the best of them all. Okay. Now, this is not talking about one woman versus another woman, is it?
No.
You have to realize it's the Christ talking to his bride, okay? And he says, you're the best of them all. And each one of us individually has to be able to see this, because this virtuous woman is you. It's your soul. It's the female inside of you. Okay? That means she's walked it out the way she's supposed to walk it out. Correct? Verse 30 goes on and says, favor, or literally the word charm. Charm is deceitful. And beauty is vain. That's transitory and unsatisfactory and temporary. Right? But a wife that reverences, not fears, but reverences the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her at the door. Not in the door, at the door. At the, not in the gate, but at the door. That word gate should be door. And didn't Jesus say, I am the door? Correct? So, who's he talking about?
Christ.
Her own works will praise her in the door, in Christ. It's where she'll be praised. It's not an external thing, is it? Everything we're talking about is an internal work in us. This book is not about external things, because God dwells where, Don?
Within.
He dwells within his people. We are all his people. When are we going to see? Quit listening to the false prophets, the false teachers that tell us that God's somewhere up in the sky and someday he'll come back. When are we going to listen to the fact that God dwells in his people? It says it multiple times in the book. If we realize he lives within us, we should be dealing him on a one-to-one basis. Each one of us should be able to. Correct? Quit worrying about hell, because that don't exist. That's only in your mind, and they created it by threatening you with it. Because God doesn't intimidate or threaten people. God calls you to him by love. God, I never went to God because I was afraid of going to hell. I went to God because God called me and I felt a love that I'd never felt before in my life from any human being. And I don't think human beings in the human form have the capacity to love like that. And when that kind of love touches you, you're going to respond to it. I don't care who you are or where you're at or how bad things have been. When that love touches you, see? But now when religion comes along and puts that slime on you, I can see lots of people rejecting it, because I rejected it. It wasn't real. It wasn't sincere. And that's one thing that God is. He's sincere. He doesn't play a game. So when we figure out at the end that I am that woman he talked about, that virtuous woman, you've got to learn what he's trying to teach you. And this whole book of Proverbs has given us a roadmap, how to live our life, how to come to that peace in our life that we can live comfortably with our, quote, husband. Okay? It's not talking about a man being superior to a woman. It's talking about the Christ being superior to my soul. That's all. And that union of the two together. And when I learn that I can never, ever be at peace with another individual in my life. My wife and I could never come to peace. We could kind of have Mexican standoffs, you know, and just look at each other and growl and not agree not to kill each other. But we could never come to peace in our life and ever live together until we come to the understanding that first I had to come to peace with my man inside. My woman inside had to come to peace with my man. And her man and woman had to come to peace in her. And when we come to peace within ourselves, then we can be at peace with someone else. So the natural expression is only teaching you something about the spiritual according to the book, isn't it? Said it's not the natural, which is, spiritual was the first, but it's the natural, and that teaches you about the spiritual in Corinthians. So when I realize that this natural alliance that I have with my wife or you have with anyone else in your life, that natural experience is only teaching me about the spiritual. And if I can't get along with anyone in the natural, do you think I'm ever going to come to peace in the spiritual? That's just a shadow of things. And when I find out that I got to come to peace here first, actually here, right in my head. When I come to peace here, I can be at peace with anybody. That don't mean I have to agree with them, and they don't have to agree with me. But see, I'm at peace with God in here. And when you come to that personal peace in your life, no matter what anybody does, you can be at peace even if you don't agree with what they got to do. And you can be totally opposed to what they're doing. It doesn't make any difference. You can be at peace with yourself. See, I can lay down and sleep at night no matter what anybody does to me. I can still sleep because I'm not fighting the issue. It's just that some things have to be dealt with. That's the job of a king, is to go ahead and make decisions. And if you think I'm insinuating I'm a king, you're wrong. I am a king. I'm not insinuating anything. Didn't the book say we are called to be a nation of kings and priests? And you need to know that kings are not dominating and controlling, are they?
No, they're loving and supportive.
But I know who I am. I know I'm called as a king. I know that. That's okay. And I don't care whether anybody else knows it or not. I know it. See, I've come to peace with who I am within me. And authority doesn't come, and most people think a king is someone who's got a lot of authority. Well, there's truth to that. But a king does not demand authority like a natural king would. Jesus never walked as a king demanding anything, did he? He walked with authority, and people saw it in him and recognized it and gave authority. See, I can't take authority from you. You can only give it to me. If you give it to me, yes. But then if you give it to me, I should never abuse it, should I? See, that's a true king. And I know what I've been called to do. I don't abuse authority. I don't have any unless someone recognizes what God has given me already. Any questions or comments?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Tie this in with John 17, where he says, becoming one with him.
Oh, yeah.
12:23.
What Lloyd brought up there was in John 17, and this is what this is all about, and that's the culmination. This is a culmination of just what I was teaching. I'll say verse 18. I'll back up 17. 16. How about that?
Yeah,
that's No, let's keep on going until I find it. Okay, verse 13. And now I come to you, and these things I speak to the world. He said, I speak in the world, that they possess my joy fulfilled in themselves. He said, I'm speaking these that you'll have my joy fulfilled in your life. I have given them your word. That's what he came to do, give us his word. And the world hated them because they were not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that you should take them out of the world, but you should keep them or guard them from evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. And that word evil down there is the word poneros, which means evil. And it takes me back to Jeremiah 17:9, where it says, the heart of man is desperately wicked. That mind of man is desperately wicked and evil above all things. So protect him from the mind of the natural man. See, that's what he's telling him to do.
Change that old woman
into a new woman. Mm-hmm. Verse 17, it says, sanctify them through your truth. And literally it should say, make them holy in your truth, because your word is truth. So the only way we're going to come to truth, and I mean be sanctified, is come to the knowledge of the truth. The truth, not what the church tells us is truth, but what the truth really is. Okay, verse 18, as you have sent me into the world, even so also I have sent them into the world, and for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also be sanctified through the truth. See, he was the pattern. He showed you, this is the way to do it. If I can do it, you can do it. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which believe into me through their word. So I did just pray for a few of them. I prayed for the rest of them that believe too. Through their word, the ones that I've taught. That all be one. How many? All be how many?
One.
As you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also be one in us, that the world believe that you have sent me. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them, that they be one, even as we are one, or just as we are one. I in them and you in me, in order that they be made perfect in one, and that the world know that you have sent me and love them as you have loved me. Father, I desire also, that they also whom you have given me be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory which thou hast given me, because you loved me before the foundation of the world. I mean, that's pretty clear. God said, hey, Jesus prayed that God take care of all of us. So who do you think he's taking care of? Beautiful picture. No condemnation in that. No guilt. No getting beat up. Any questions or comments or rocks to throw? We receive them all.